Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, it is Thursday night, and after me, a slap of the bass means it's time for the sports crib. Host about Mr. Kalani Lord. Kalani, how we doing tonight? Hello? Well, I see him in the queue. Hopefully, we'll connect sooner or later, but we have a few. Very interesting topics to talk about this evening. Of course, we won't be giving our Super Bowl picks until next week, but we do have a lot of very good discussions. Tigers coming back. We've had the Hall of Fame inductees for 2018. Also, the two from earlier in December, so that's something else to talk about. We'll talk maybe as a little added feature, if we get to it, we can talk about I see you in the queue, but I can't hear you talking. And here's Don. Let's see.
James, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Kalani, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good, James. It's Thursday. Weekend's almost here. And maybe we'll talk about it a little bit later, but we might be getting some extra football coming in the near future.
Yeah, I've seen the last XFL production, and I wasn't I didn't like the product that they put on the field, and I guess most football fans didn't either. But it seems this is coming with some new rules, so it might be something to talk about either this program or some later one, depending on how much time we have. I see Don is here. Last week, Don was on a snow day. Don, how's the weather down here in Texas? Is anything improved? Hello, Don?
Can you hear me?
Oh, man. There you go.
Well, there you go.
It's warm enough where I can wear shorts and T-shirt. Highs in the, low 60s, lows in the 40s. Not too bad.
40s, T-shirt. Shorts, okay. Not sure. That's the vision that I want in my eyes right now. but anyway, let's talk a little sports here, man. I'm going to ask you guys about the Hall of Fame. It seems. Let's see. I think it was back in December. The Modern Era Committee selected Jack Morris and Alan Trammell, and now we have Chipper Jones, Vladimir Guerrero, Jim Tomey, and Trevor Hoffman all going into the Hall of Fame. But it seems like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens haven't broken that barrier yet. Gentlemen, your thoughts? Starting with you, Don.
Well, I'm going to show you how ignorant I am. I thought Jack Morris was already in there, so I'm glad he made it. Chipper Jones, yeah, I'm all for that. The thing about Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, I think there's a lot of still a lot of hard feelings that, you know, that they were, I think with Barry Bonds, it was, you know, known that he was doing performance-enhancing drugs. And with Roger Clemens, there was always a suspicion that he got by with it, lied to Congress or whatever. And, you know, the powers that be, I think they're going to hold that against him, you know, for a foreseeable future. But that's just the nature of the beast. I mean, they're, you know, the thing about baseball, if there's any cloud of suspicion that you did something, you know, did something devious or misleading, they're going to punish you for it. And that, and the punishment in this case, since they're both retired, is keep them out of the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I would have. Oh, go ahead, James. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, because, I mean, they did gain a little bit. I think, let's see, Clemens got 57%, and Bonds got 56%, still putting them ahead of Curt Schilling and Sammy Sosa. Go ahead, Kalani, finish your thought.
No, I just have to say that I'm very happy for the guys who got into the Hall of Fame. Chipper Jones, one of the best of his generation, switch hitter, truly somebody that a lot of kids looked up to. I remember playing baseball, and there was kids saying, oh, I'm like Chipper Jones, and wearing the high socks and everything. And then Vladimir Guerrero, I mean, you could throw a ball in the dirt, and he was still ringing it out the park. And then Jim Tomei, I mean, that guy was seriously a monster at the plate. But I honestly cannot respect the Hall of Fame of Major League Baseball Hall of Fame when you don't have two of your greatest players in it. Barry Bonds is arguably the greatest baseball player we've ever seen. Now, I get it. I totally understand. There's allegations. There's hearsay. There's whispers. There's, hey, did you hear? Got it. Nothing's proven. Nothing whatsoever. Don might claim that he's the fastest driver in Texas. Hell, we might even suspect that Don is like Dominic Toretto from Fast and the Furious. Sideways, twisting all through the roads and whatnot. He got a whole lane where he just got donut and skid marks all over. He don't got no tickets. There's no video of it. There's nobody saying, yes, I saw Don speeding going 200 miles down an hour. But we all suspect it. So we're just not going to allow him to be in the whatever Hall of Fame. No. This is total BS and nonsense, especially when you look at the fact that former players from the 70s, 60s, and I believe early 80s even said they were doing cocaine. They used certain cheating aspects back then, kind of like Jerry Rice saying, oh, yeah, I used stick'em, because back then it wasn't considered, quote-unquote, cheating. Cheating is cheating. And when these guys admitted or got caught, they're cheaters. But for guys who haven't admitted it, did not get caught, there's really no hard evidence against it other than, well, he said it, so we're going to take his word. What, because Barry Bonds wasn't friendly with the media? Because Roger Clemens, in some ways, kind of let you know how he really felt and wasn't going to play the quote-unquote game? We're going to hold them out? It is total nonsense and total BS. These are two of your greatest players, and you're not going to let them in because you didn't like their attitudes or they didn't pass the quote-unquote eye test? Get real. The Baseball Hall of Fame is any sports Hall of Fame is a prestigious honor for one's career to say no matter what you won as far as championships, you are one of the best to ever play this game. And to not have two of them in there because they might have taken something, but you don't know if they did, it is total nonsense. And honestly, baseball should be ashamed of itself. But given the way that they think about themselves, it'll take them another 50 years before they realize they was wrong.
Don, do you agree or do you think that perhaps our generation is just too critical, and I don't want to say has more respect to the game, but maybe Kalani was saying, they didn't pass the eye test, so we don't give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, there could be something said to that. I just think that, you see, our generation, I kind of feel that that baseball of all the, you know, the big three leagues, NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, I think Major League Baseball is the more judgmental. I'm going to use that word, judgmental. They're more, they kind of see themselves as being more of the purist. And I just think that if they'd been the NFL and had like similar, you know, if Roger Clemens had won in six Cy Youngs, if he had been in the NFL and had, you know, six Super Bowl wins or six MVPs, he'd be in, you know, no problem. NFL is a little bit more forgiving. So I think it's just the circumstances that have conspired against that. And by the way, in high school, Roger Clemens was a pretty good linebacker. He may not be Division I, but he had some offers to the smaller colleges as well.
I think one day we're going to have a discussion on that word, forgiving, and Major League Baseball. People of color and perhaps from some of the islands and South America might have a little different take on that. But we'll go on with today's discussion. But I want to come back to that because that might make for a very interesting discussion. Well, let's talk about another gentleman that seems to be, you know, I mean, the whole golf world is talking about his coming back. We've seen this before and hasn't really been too successful. But once again, Tiger says he's going to come back. He's going to give it another try. And I'm going to start with you on this one, Kalani. Can Tiger effectively resurrect his career, or are we expecting too much? And by resurrecting his career, I mean, I'm not saying he has to go out and win a bunch of majors, but at least, you know, we don't want to see him number 50. I mean, you know, competing top 10, top 15, maybe win a couple minors. I mean, is this too much to expect from Tiger after such a long layoff and all the rigors to his body?
Great point you bring up there, James, and it definitely makes one wonder and ponder the possibilities. Honestly, I think it's a little bit of both. I think Tiger can reinvent himself, but I also think we're going to be having too high expectations. Just real quickly, when Michael Jordan decided to come back to basketball in 2001 to play for the Wizards, at 39 and 40 years old, he averaged just under 23 points and then 20 points a game for his two seasons there. And somehow we said this was a bad image for Michael Jordan, that at 40 years old, he averaged 20 points. I'm sorry, can you name me another 40-year-old in NBA history that averaged 20 points? Kareem Abdul-Jabbar did it. So this, I definitely think that if Tiger comes back, as you said, James, anything outside of finishing top three or top five, it's a failure. And I feel that that pressure the public puts on the athlete already adds to the pressure they're putting on themselves, to where we're expecting greatness or it's failure. And don't get me wrong, I get it. I get the Ricky Bobby scenario, first or last. But at the same time, given his age, given his long layoff, as you pointed out, and then also given his injury history, should we really expect him to come back and be the Tiger Woods of 98, where he had the red sweater on, pumping the fist, Nike commercials? No, Father Time is undefeated. It beats everybody. But I certainly believe that if he can come back, and I don't know if it's mental or what, but if he could come back and just find ways to change up his diet, his workout, try some new techniques, and stay healthy, I definitely feel that he can go out there and resurrect himself. Maybe not right away, maybe not right out the gate he's going to be kicking everyone's tail and putting the fear in them, but I definitely think within time, if he can stay healthy, he can get there, because golf is one of those sports where as you get older, your skills still are there for the most part. Maybe you can't drive it, 450 yards, but your overall skills and knowledge are still there. But I think the pressure is what's going to be unfair, and, you know, it's just the nature of the business. But I definitely think the pressure is going to be extremely high, and no matter what, outside of stomping everybody out by 10, I definitely think he won't be able to live up to everyone's expectations, including his own.
Golf, you know, since the rankings have certainly went down since Tiger's not been in the game, do you think that this is golf is doing this more for rankings in spite of what we've seen from Tiger in the past? Will just his name bring, you know, more viewers, more people to the links? Is this all for the publicity?
Was that to me?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think Tiger is looking at coming back, you know, and being a force and on the tour. His last outing was not what we've come to expect from Tiger, but compared to recent outings, he's definitely improving. But I think the tour needs Tiger Woods to perform well. That's a given. I mean, if I'm a sponsor in the PGA, I'm like, come on, Tiger, let's get what we get. And like Clunny pointed out, you know, golf is a sport where age is not the factor that it would be in other sports. I mean, Jack Nicklaus, Sam Snead, Ben Hogan, these guys were winning golf tournaments in their 50s and 60s. And Tiger, last I looked, was younger than me. So, I mean, he's still in golf years. He's middle age. He's not old at all. So I think there's a lot of room for growth for him to come back and be another player. Will he recapture the magic he had his first five seasons on the tour? Probably not. But you know what? If he can win, you know, a major every other year, I think that'd be good for the game. So, yeah, I definitely think it cuts both ways.
Yeah, if he wins a major every other year, I'm sure not only Tiger will be surprised, but so will a whole hell of a lot of golf fans. But let's talk about the NBA. It's almost time for the All-Star Weekend. I believe it's February 14th, not that far away, right after the Super Bowl. But it seems that the NBA has submitted a proposal for legalizing gambling. They set forth a couple rules, of course. And by the way, they've also said that they like 1% of all the proceeds. Kalani, what do you think about the NBA's proposal to get into legalized gambling?
Well, honestly, I think it's a good idea just because, you know, it's another way of just staying ahead of the curve. You know, the NBA was one of the first leagues to really embrace the idea of fantasy sports. Now, I know football reigns supreme, and that's number one. But, you know, it kind of took them a little while to come around to that idea and promoting it and whatnot, whereas the NBA was like, hey, let's work with these guys. And let's work with DraftKings and these other ones. Let's try to figure this out since it's such a big business. I know so many people are going to think, okay, Vinny and Paulie are going to go into the locker room. They're going to drop a bag in front of LeBron James and say, here, we need you to lose by 5 points tonight. That's not how it works anymore, guys, especially in today's world where so many people are around, so much access, everyone's got a camera phone. It's not like that. I definitely say, why not? Go for it. And it could certainly open up not only a new stream of revenue, but, you know, there are certain things in this world that I just don't understand why they're illegal. And gambling, to me, I don't understand why it's illegal for us to go out and gamble. Now, I get it. Maybe, you know, you can, just like everything else, you can't have certain ties to it. You know, you can't be an owner of a team betting against yourself. But I just never truly understood it. It's our money that we worked hard for. If we want to spend it foolishly, like, what's the difference between me going to a blackjack table, sitting there for 3 hours, and me betting on the over-under of a game? I don't understand that, really. So I say kudos to the NBA for once again being one step ahead of the curve. Football will probably come around in another 5 years, and baseball probably another 30 years before they accept this. But kudos to the NBA for trying to be ahead and stick with the times. And, hey, as evolution comes, you either can change with it or you'll be on the wrong side of history. So kudos to Adam Silver.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Don, your thoughts on the NBA getting legalized gambling?
Well, my sentiments are exactly what Kalani said. I can't understand why organizations, the government, you know, they always want to regulate our actions, whether, you know, it's our money, we should be able to, you know, we should be able to waste it as we want, you know. I mean, he's talking about blackjack tables. I mean, you know, video poker, that always seems my downfall in Vegas. I like those video poker games. I don't like the regulations. I don't like it in government. I don't like it in my private life or public life, whatever. Just, you know, it has some sense, but yeah, I don't like that, that restriction on our personal liberties and freedoms.
Yeah. I think the NBA has some big, good thoughts and some things to implement. I think, you know, it's that 1%, you know, but when you think of it, I mean, with everybody else profiting, is 1% really that much? I mean, I know it comes out to millions of dollars, but 1%, especially to put the proper safeguards and whatnot on it, I think that would be worth it.
Well, James, no. I'll say, James, let me throw this in there. It starts off at 1%. Is it going to stop at 1%? That's my question.
Well, I mean, would, just like everything else, your salary starts out at one end, but aren't there provisions where, you know, you think that your salary should be increased?
Well, yeah, but I'm saying we're making the point that it's, you know, the NBA only wants 1% of the winnings. That's today. Tomorrow, it could be 5. It could be, you know.
No, hold it. Maybe you got the wrong concept here. The NBA doesn't want 1% of the winnings. They want 1% of the gross.
Well,
come on, bro.
They not no fools.
they want 1% of the gross. So, you know, I mean, hey, like I said, you know, we're not talking about a little sum of money here.
Well, no, but that's my point. They could always, you know, 1% today, 5%, you know, later. It's like the IRS. You know, when the IRS, the income tax came out in 1913, it was a lot different than what it's become today. And so I'm just saying, if you're going to create a monster, you better have some safeguards. That's all I'm saying.
I totally get where Don is coming from, and I agree. Maybe if they start off at 1%, maybe they should put it in that if we increase it as the years goes on, we can't go above, let's just say, 7%. Like, no matter what, that's our cap at 7% for the first 10 years or something. I totally get what Don is saying, because it starts at 1% today. Who's to say in 3 years it's not 13%? 3 years from that, it's not 22%. So I definitely get where he's coming from, and there should be some parameters to block how big of a percentage the NBA can increase it to.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is hoping that, you know, the NBA has learned from the mistakes of some of the other sports and some of the other, you know, legalized flops that we've had. I mean, you know, come on, we've had trouble legalizing everything from FanDuel to what some of the other fan sites that you have where you can just go on. I mean, you know, all these things that sooner or later come under federal scrutiny, government scrutiny, I mean, you know, state government scrutiny. So the bigger the pie gets, the bigger the slice everybody wants. So I understand why you're talking about building in, you know, you build in a cap. But as we've seen with the NFL and a lot of other sports, you know, that cap soon goes by the wayside, the more the value of the bottom line becomes. Kalani, did Jason Kidd just become Minnesota's Mark Jackson?
Well, as of right now, it does kind of look like that. I mean, it's unfortunate that Jason Kidd was out. I thought he was doing a decent job, but I also see this is what I do praise Milwaukee about, and this is what I say other small franchises that aren't in major cities, they need to do the same thing. You need to do everything you possibly can to try to keep your superstar there, i.e. the Pelicans with Anthony Davis, the Bucks with the Greek Freak, because you're not a big franchise that's going to attract a lot of free agents just off the whim, at least until these guys prove that they can win, a la LeBron James in Cleveland. And even then, he's not bringing a lot of free agents there to Cleveland anyway. So they've made trades. You know, they try to bring in Greg Monroe. Didn't work. Shipped them out. Bring in Eric Bledsoe. Unfortunately, Jabari Parker, who was the second overall pick for them, he's had two ACL tears. So things just didn't work out there. But they got a rookie of the year last year late in the mid-second round. They've been trying to do everything they can to bring in players, and now they're looking at Jason Kidd and saying, well, you're a good coach, but given that we made the playoffs last year, we should be much better than what we are this year. And you're right, James. Maybe they're just using him as a scapegoat, a la the Warriors with Mark Jackson, but you can't argue with the fact that when the Warriors made that switch and brought in Steve Kerr, that offense took off, and, well, what is it, what, three straight NBA finals with two championships? It's unfortunate that Mark had to leave, but, you know, it did kind of work out for them. Not saying the same thing will happen with Milwaukee, but the fact that they're trying to do everything that they can to not only please, but to show their superstar that we are trying to win. We're not trying to rest on, well, we have you, and we'll just draft young guys and put them around you. And, no, we're going to do everything we can to show you that when free agency comes, we want you to resign, because guess what? This is all going to be about you, and we're going to build a franchise around you, and we're going to try to win now, not 3 years, not 5 years from now, but now. So I definitely got to give Milwaukee credit for that. Hopefully Jason Kidd is able to catch on someplace else, even if he's got to take maybe a year off and maybe go into the booth commentating or whatever. I definitely would like to see him get another job, because outside of the water incident with the spilled cup in Brooklyn, I think he's done a pretty good job as a head coach in both of his stops so far.
Kalani mentions, the Greek Freak, but the Greek Freak really wasn't down with Mark Jackson losing his job. I mean, Jason Kidd losing his job. In fact, he, wanted to go and talk to the owners and whatnot. Considering that, you know, that they've gotten rid of his coach. Unless they come forth with a winning record, do you think that the Greek Freak is really going to buy what they're selling with the, you know, elimination of his coach, Jason Kidd?
Well, it is kind of, you know, after I'm reading that, is that he was very uncomfortable with Kidd being let go, and I get that. I mean, you know, that's your coach, and I just think that it's funny we call him the Greek Freak, because I don't think anyone on this show can pronounce his name. But at the Lucca, whatever. Anyway, I thought that was funny. But, I mean, this kid is young, and he's, I don't even think he's reached his potential. And he's in a situation where I think he needs to be exposed to different coaching styles. Maybe Jason Kidd wasn't the one he needed at this stage of his career. I think that I think the comparison to Steve Kerr was a good one. So someone that will come in and take that talent and build around him, and because this is a this is a budding superstar. I mean, this is the probably going to be an elite player in the next few seasons. So I think that I like Jason Kidd. I really do. But I think that maybe it might have been the right call, only because I think that, the East is that there's a lot of room in the East to improve as far as teams go, as far as being competitive, whereas the West seems to be kind of laid out to several teams with the talent spread out. But I think Milwaukee could push Cleveland, teams like Cleveland and Boston, with the right personnel. So I'm looking at them next few years to be a contender.
Claudia, I'm going to start with you on this one here because this is just something that I've wondered about. I know I didn't include it in the outline or anything like that, but you look at Jason Kidd, you look at Mark Jackson, you look at Jeff Van Gundy, and since these guys to me have all been really good coaches, and they're excellent commentators for their respective stations. But while these guys really know X's and O's and seem to be player coaches, does it seem to you that it's harder for these type of guys that have been analysts and are players coaches rather than organizational rather than company men? Does it seem that it's harder for these type of guys to get jobs than it is for, some of the other coaches, especially when you consider, some of the records of some of these teams? I mean, you look at Orlando, you look at Atlanta, you look at Phoenix, you look at some of the other more or less teams that are on the bottom, even the Pelicans. Kalani, what's your thoughts on that?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, no, that's an excellent question, and it does make one raise the eyebrow on why are more of these guys from the analyst booth or from the commentating booth getting a chance to be head coaches. I mean, even somebody like Jeff Van Gundy, former head coach. Now, I know he's been rumored a lot. I don't know if maybe he's just waiting for the right situation contract-wise. Again, with him, I'm not sure what his deal is, but you look at Doc Rivers. He came from there, no prior coaching experience. Now, things have not necessarily gone well for him outside of his two championship runs in Boston, where he went 1-1 there with the veterans. But he did get released by Orlando. Boston was getting ready to fire him before KG and Ray Allen came into town, and things, been a little rocky since then. But Mark Jackson turned the Warriors around. 50 plus wins there. Great defense. Steve Kerr, 3 NBA Finals, 2 championships. I mean, in football, we see it as a copycat league. And in basketball, we see it as a copycat league when it comes to players, but not with coaches. And I don't know why. I don't know if maybe they looked at Mark Jackson and Doc Rivers and said, these guys are kind of difficult to work with in some cases. Not necessarily all, but, you know, Mark Jackson did rub some people the wrong way, whether it's because he was so faith-driven and really was a high-powered Christian, or maybe his no-tolerance attitude and, you know, hard-nosed demeanor. Doc Rivers with, you know, with his, some of his stubbornness and some of his ways. And, you know, Steve Kerr obviously has worked out with the Warriors, but maybe because of that they look at it and say, don't really know if we want to have to deal with that. But I would certainly say, given the success we've seen so far, I would actually go here for a little bit more often, as you said, especially if I'm a team. Let's be honest. Orlando's not turning around in 1 year and going to the championship. Atlanta's not doing the same thing. Charlotte and other teams. Why not take a different chance to see what you can get there? You know, you're going the same route with hiring assistants or coordinators from these other teams or college coaches possibly, and you're not going anywhere. Why not go to a place where all of these guys have to study film, have to analyze the players, see what their tendencies are, really focus in on defense, how to break it down so that they can explain it to the viewers. I mean, that's some pretty good hands-on experience they're getting just from that perspective. So I'm not sure why they haven't gone that route. I know if I had a team, if I was a Sacramento Kings or, you know, one of those teams that wasn't making the playoffs or wasn't close to it, I would certainly take a chance on it just because you never know. Who's to say you don't find the next Steve Kerr? Mark Jackson doesn't help turn your franchise around and you start getting 50-plus wins. Hey, last I checked, with or without a championship, a 50-plus win NBA season, you had a pretty good season, last I checked. I don't know.
You know, I mean, you talk about Stan Van Gundy. Jeff, the last time Jeff had a job, Alonzo Mourning was playing with the Heat. I mean, you know, come on. Stan has been like a damn Jamaican. He's had three jobs and hasn't had a winning record in none of them. So, I mean, you know, what how do you explain it? Are fan-friendly, I mean, are player-friendly coaches becoming a thing of the past in the NBA?
Well, you know, whenever you're a coach, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, I've been there, not at that level, of course, but, you know, you got to walk that fine line between the disciplinarian, the father figure, but yet also relating to the players. And I think that, just my perspective, I think I'm better off not coaching this generation of student athlete. I can't imagine in the pros it's probably twice as bad, but five times as bad. But the question, you know, is becoming a thing in the past. I think there'll always be coaches out there who relate better than some to their players. I can only look at the Spurs and say, well, you know, Popovich, I would not consider him a player's coach per se. He's a little bit hard nosed, kind of old school. You know, as good as Duncan was, he would still tell Duncan to piss off if Duncan wasn't getting full effort. He does the similar stuff to, you know, Parker Ginobili. He's an equal employer, jerk, I guess you would call it. But, hey, he's successful, right? And then you got, you know, guys that are perceived as the player's coach, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So I think there's a line you have to walk between the two.
Don, since you brought up Pop, I'm gonna kind of skip ahead a question here, and I'll come back and talk about the Cavs and Coach New in a minute. But I've got a few questions for you, Don. Number one, there are rumors that Kawhi wants out of San Antonio. Your thoughts on that? Number two, you were just talking about Pop, but we all know that Pop and LeBron have a very special relationship, as well as a mutual respect for one another. Do you think that Pop should maybe consider recruiting LeBron? I mean, you know, based on their relationship. And do you think that LeBron will be in a Rockets uniform in 2020?
Oh, well, you threw a whole sink at me on this one. Let's talk about Kawhi Leonard first. I have, you know, it's funny. I have not heard rumor that he wants out of San Antonio. I have not heard that. I do know that the rumor we have is that this injury is not going away, the injury to his quad, and that he might be dealing with some personal issues. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not diagnosed, but it's almost like he might be suffering some kind of depression. According to the team reports, he's a little bit distant at practice. He's not, you know, hanging out with his normal friends. He's got an outside doctor that's been looking at him.
Don, not to interrupt. There's also been talk of one of the reasons why, or one of the influences on him is his uncle that has become his agent now.
Now, I haven't heard that. I haven't. The San Antonio papers must be, or the media must be keeping that from us. I haven't heard that part. But you probably know more than I do on that. I just know that there's a disconnect. Now, if anyone can change that, I think Popovich could, but. You know, if you're correct and Kawhi is seeking counsel from an uncle, and I'm always worried about these uncles that show up, you know, that's a different animal there. But I'm a huge Kawhi Leonard fan. I hope he stays in San Antonio uniform. I hope he can recover. I hope he can get his head on. Because San Antonio is a different team. Now, San Antonio, we're doing fine. But we could be doing better, I think, with Kawhi in the lineup. And as far as LeBron goes, I did not see LeBron in a Rockets uniform. I don't think there's enough room for him and Harden. It's not like having Curry and Durant. I just don't think that's good chemistry there. Now, if you want to put LeBron in the Spurs uniform, I think that might could work because, you know, with things going with Kawhi Leonard, I think the next guy up would be LaMarcus Aldridge, who's had an outstanding year, probably one of the best years he's had since he's been in the league. But, you know, you put that kind of cast with LeBron, and there's a new beast in the West, and it won't be in Golden State. But we can dream. Dream big.
Kalani, have you heard any of the rumors that I heard them on what I consider a good source, ESPN and Fox Sports also. Claudia, have you heard some of the same rumors?
I've heard slight whispers, but nothing that so far I have taken seriously. Now, sure, I know ESPN and Fox Sports, they have obviously much deeper sources than what either of us can ever have, and that's where we get a lot of our information from. But even from other websites or other places that I've looked around, there hasn't really been a Kawhi wants out. I think it's more so Kawhi and Spurs just aren't seeing eye to eye on his injury right now. And, you know, like it was said, because he could be seeing an outside doctor, it's kind of like, wait, we were told that you'll be ready by this time, but now you're not ready. We were told that it wasn't that serious, but actually it was. And I think it's just a miscommunication between both the player, his doctor, and the team's doctor, and the team itself. So that's the only thing that I've heard. Now, when I did hear about LeBron going to San Antonio, again, not as a rumor like, oh, that's what I'm hearing, but just a possibility, I actually thought, holy smack, that makes the most sense, because he goes to a franchise that has a proven system. I mean, these, look, as much as I dislike San Antonio because I'm a Lakers fan, I got to tip my hat off to the fact, James, well, Don knows this, but James, it's been 20 years. They've won 50-plus games. They're the damn New England Patriots of the NBA almost. And it is just remarkable. You know, that's not nor even with my Lakers, as great as we were, we had some down years where we didn't win. But no, the Spurs find a way to do it. They find a way every single year. When Ginobili's ball spot keeps getting bigger, he still finds a way to hit you with that Euro step. I don't know how he does it. LeBron goes there. He's got a proven system. He's got a head coach that not only he respects, but one that commands respect, and one that I truly believe, I think LeBron can respect to where he can take some of the pressure off and trying to do everything and say, Coach Pop kind of knows what he's doing. Look at his bling bling. And then also you look at guys like LaMarcus Aldridge. Hell, if Kawhi Leonard somehow is still there, and then the players they have already on the team and the players they bring in, yeah, it would make them the favorites in the West. And the Spurs have already shown that if given a chance, they can be a legit threat to the Golden State Warriors. Unfortunately, Kawhi Leonard got injured against them in the postseason in Game 1 where they were up by 23 against them. Now, granted, we've seen comebacks before, so I won't say that that was the end-all, be-all. But this is a team that has shown they don't get, they're not going to get swept, and they're not going to get dragged through the mud by the Golden State Warriors. You add LeBron to that list? Oh, my. The only downside to it would be this, I think. Look at Paul George in the Western Conference. He didn't make the All-Star game. But if you look at his numbers, put him in the East, he's an All-Star, damn near a starter. You go in the West, you're just an average guard now. You got your numbers need to be a little bit higher. And I wonder if for LeBron, given that he's already been in the league for 15 years, does he want to go through a Western Conference postseason? Because, you know, outside of injuries, you're never going to get a solid, decent, favorable matchup. Whereas in the East, you might get the first round where it's like, yeah, this team's good, but I'm going to beat them. Second round, okay, but I'm probably going to beat them. Third round, it'll be tough, but most likely I'm going to beat them unless they are just on fire. He doesn't really get his challenge until the championship. And I think in the Western Conference, it'll be round by round by round challenge. Now, if he makes it to the finals, well, then it's easy, easy peasy. But I don't know if 15 years in, if he wants to go through the Western Conference postseason and that meat grinder. Other than that, I really do see everything else kind of line up and saying, yeah, that would make sense. And just as a Laker fan, please, 8 pounds, 6 ounce baby Jesus, don't let that happen.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about your Lakers, man. Stephen A. says that Kyle Kuzma is special. But, you know, last week we kind of criticized him because of his lack of production. And we were talking about the Lakers being a better team with Lonzo Ball on the court. But, Kalani, is that really true? Are the Lakers really better with Lonzo? And is Kuzma really the future leader of that squad?
Well, for Kyle Kuzma, he certainly has the potential because it is L.A. and they do try the free agents. It you know, it would depend who they bring in. If they bring in a LeBron or, you know, a Paul George or, you know, you know, whoever, somebody of that high caliber, they obviously would take the mantle. But Kyle Kuzma is certainly a special rookie right now. He leads the team in points. He's up there among the top four in rebounds as well. And he's really, you know, he's got range and he's very aggressive. So whether or not he's the future leader, I don't think he's necessarily going to be the superstar of the team. But if he continues to grow like this, I could certainly see him being a future all-star. His all-around game, and if he just matures more and gets better all around and continues to grow his all-around game, I certainly can see that he could be a future all-star, possibly. The West is so deep. But yes, Lonzo Ball on the court for the Lakers are a better team. Their points per games go up. Their assists per games go up. Their shooting percentage goes up, even though he doesn't necessarily help it. and their assist goes up. And guess what? Their defense goes up because Lonzo's not that horrible on defense. He's not the most athletic. He's not the quickest, but he's not getting blown past by all these guards that everyone said was going to eat him up. Sure, they still get points, but let's be honest. Who shuts down point guards these days? Nobody. But Lonzo Ball, you know, I don't mind it as a fan, but it's unfortunate that as a fan, I see how people necessarily don't appreciate what Lonzo Ball has been able to do. He's averaging 10 points, 7 assists, 7 rebounds. That's as a rookie that can't shoot or score effectively yet, and yet he's up there with 7 assists, 7 rebounds. You do realize 3 more of each, he's averaging a triple-double as a rookie. So it's just unfortunate that people allowed, and for different reasons, but allowed his father's words to make their feelings on how he's done overshadow his real productivity. But overall, yes, I do enjoy watching Lonzo Ball play out there for the Lakers. We've seen their record, I believe, is 1-7 or 1-8 without him on the court. I think they won their second game last night without him. So, yeah, their record is not that good without him. So Lonzo Ball, for better or for worse, he certainly does make this team a lot better because he gets everyone involved. And Jason Kidd showed it along with several other point guards throughout their careers. John Stockton as well. You get your teammates involved, you're going to get better regardless. So better talent, better record. But right now, yeah, we certainly do look like a better team with him on the floor.
Okay. I can't leave the NBA or even the NFL without talking about that mistake on the lake. And I'm talking about the Cavaliers and the troubles that they're having right now. Kalani, are the Cavs using Love and Coach Lou as scapegoats for the fact that they can't seem to get their shit together?
I certainly think so. I certainly think so. They're trying to use every way that they can to do it. And what's very interesting, they are not pointing – now, he's obviously the reason that they have been where they've been, and he's obviously the reason that they're favorites in the East. I know right now in January they're not, but remember last year in January they did not have a good January at all. And then also to finish out the season, they had, I believe, a losing record or a 500 record, and they still went to the finals. So I'm not all that worried about it. You know, we've seen this before, but they have not really talked about how, hey, you do realize that the defensive rating or whatever, LeBron James is dead last. Like, per the QBR thing, yeah, per that for defense, LeBron James is dead last. That means dead last in rookies, dead last in all the superstars, he's dead last. James Harden, who does not play any defense apparently, he's ahead of LeBron James. So I definitely think it's unfortunate, and I like what Shannon Sharp said the other day on Undisputed. If I was on a team, I would have told Isaiah Thomas, bro, you ain't been here long enough to talk to me, so don't you even dare. And then called out all the other players. For better or for worse, Kevin Love has been the second or third best player on this Cavs team his entire time there. No doubt about that. This is a guy who was a top three at his position in Minnesota, one of the top NBA players overall with his numbers. But unfortunately, because he had a poor team and they couldn't win, it was his fault apparently, even though his numbers matched all the other superstars in the NBA. He goes there, and just as I said, for him would be the same thing that happened to Chris Bosh, a perennial all-star, one of the best at his position, one of the key guys in the NBA, but then you team up with LeBron and you're the third wheel and your numbers go down and you have to figure out how to become that third wheel. Now you're the problem. You can't play. You're no good. Yeah, okay, nice try. Kevin Love, I think, is still a tremendous player, an obvious top player on virtually every other team in the league. And it's unfortunate because he's done everything he can to be as professional as he can in Cleveland, and yet he gets thrown under the bus consistently. And for Ty Lue, you know, he's got to find a way to get grips on his team, which is hard to do when you got number 23 over there kind of contemplating, well, if you do something I don't like, I'll just leave. No, please, LeBron, don't leave. Stay here. Well, then you better do what I like. Okay, but then what you like isn't working, i.e. we gave Tristan Thompson all that money. He wanted to become a damn Kardashian on the show. We told him not to mess with them, but he didn't want to listen. But, you know, you liked it. So, come on now.
That's funny.
Don, your Your thoughts on the Cavs. Is LeBron becoming a bully, or was he always a bully and we just gave him a pass?
I'm gonna use the word bully, but he kind of forces his will on other people, I think. And you know what? That's being a superstar. I mean, you look back, you're gonna tell me that Michael Jordan didn't tell Pat Riley what to do here and there. I'm sure Michael Jordan told Pete, what's guy? Yeah, brain fart. But you know what I'm talking about?
You mean
Chicago.
What's that? You mean Phil Jackson?
Phil Jackson. Yes. I'm sure that they always gave their input, and the input was always taken seriously. So LeBron's no different. We know how Kobe was in L.A. So I think with superstardom comes super ego, and there's that kind of persuasion going on. But LeBron is LeBron. It's only a matter of time before he leaves Cleveland again. It could be after this season. Who knows?
Yeah, that is very possible. Now let's switch from the Cavs to the Clowns, the Browns. Don, it's rumored that the Browns, we know that they've hired our old offensive coordinator, Todd Haley, but it seems like they're going to pass on both Josh Rosen and Darnold. They seem to want to go with the quarterback from Wyoming. Don, what's your thoughts on this Josh Allen kid?
Well, I think the name that we're leaving out is Baker Mayfield, but I would go after him for Josh Allen. Everything I was hearing about Josh Allen is that at the beginning of the season he was projected as a early second round pick, and now you have him all over the draft board. Just from watching him play in the season he had, and just looking at some of the stuff that he does, the passes he can make, he can't make, I would say he might be a late third rounder, to be honest. But I'm not going to presume to tell Cleveland how to fuck up their team, because they do a good job of it themselves. That might help. I don't even know if they need to go get a quarterback. They need help otherwise. I mean, get a defense, keep people from scoring on you. Just you have the first pick in the first round doesn't mean you always have to go after a quarterback. Try something different. You've taken quarterbacks in the first round the last several years, and none of them have worked out. Do something different. It's like we were talking about gambling a while ago. You spend your money foolishly. Cleveland seems to have a way of doing that with their draft picks.
Kalani, I mean, plus $30 million to spend on this under the salary cap. First number one pick. Josh Allen, are the Browns just typically doing their thing and tripping over their own feet once again?
Honestly, James, I really don't know. Remember, there was a kid a couple of years ago out of North Dakota State by the name of Carson Wentz, who came from a small program. He's playing against guys who will never make it to the NFL, and what do we really know about him, and how would that translate to the NFL? And, Philadelphia, it's been pretty good so far. So I honestly don't know. I mean, you look at two other quarterbacks in the same division. Ben Roethlisberger, did he come from a traditional powerhouse? Are we really saying, hey, go to Miami, Ohio, and check out what they got? No, not necessarily. Joe Flacco, who's won a Super Bowl, he came from Delaware. Is that a perennial NFL powerhouse? No. I honestly say, you know what? If they're looking and scouting him and they truly are seeing that he's outperforming Rosen and Darnold, then okay, why not go that way with him? Look, it can't be any worse than the last 47 quarterbacks you've had there, so hey, what do you got to lose? I would honestly say this, and I'm being honest, y'all, I won't go too long. If I'm the Cleveland Browns, I don't even go quarterback like Don suggested. I would try to go out and get Kirk Cousins. To me, I think Kirk Cousins would be an honestly good quarterback for this system. Hugh Jackson is an offensive-minded guy, kind of similar to Jay Gruden with the offense, and we've seen Kirk Cousins with DeSean Jackson and with Pierre Garçon, and without them, he was still putting up humongous numbers. This year, I dare any of you to name me an offensive player that had a big year with Kirk Cousins to help him put up the numbers he did. I'll wait, exactly. Really nobody. Everyone was injured or just wasn't as productive. So if I'm the Browns, I would go get Kirk Cousins. He's a veteran quarterback. He's already proven himself with and without talent. And now you have a veteran that can help not only lead you now, but you also give the rookie you drafted, DeSean Kizer, time to grow and mature. Remember, his coach at Notre Dame, Kelly, said that he wasn't mature enough and ready for the NFL. And as much as we all ragged on him for that, it actually was the honest truth. But you don't want to give up on him too quick because he does have some tremendous physical tools. With bringing in Kirk Cousins, now you take those two picks in the top four. Now you go out, you get a Saquon Barkley, you get Fitzpatrick, the safety from Alabama, you get an offensive lineman, you get the Bradley Chubb if he happens to fall past the Colts and whatnot at number three. You get two other top players, or you use that fourth pick, trade back with somebody, get some more picks, and you get other players to put around it. Get a wide receiver, get this, get that. But if you go out and get yourself a veteran quarterback, you can certainly prove. I mean, look at what the New Orleans Saints did with Drew Brees and other teams. Look what the Denver Broncos did when they brought in Peyton Manning. They tried to go with young quarterbacks, and look how horrible they've been. If nothing else, I would try to go get a proven veteran, not some of the other veterans that they went out and got that weren't successful, a proven veteran. And I truly believe that's what Kirk Cousins is. And honestly, I think he would – I'm not saying he would be the Messiah, but I certainly think he would be a better option than any young quarterback that they could get in the draft.
Well, it's interesting you chose Kirk Cousins because that is actually my next question. Is it time for the Redskins to sign Kirk Cousins? And do as you suggested the Browns do, build around him.
Well, I would say yes, but the Redskins have kind of shown that they don't value Kirk Cousins like he values himself. Now, I understand that maybe they don't want to pay $30, $35 million a year for him. Okay, sure, but he's been franchise tagged a couple times. The owner and the head coach have kind of dismissed him as if, he's all right, he's okay. So, honestly, I would just move on if I'm the Redskins. You don't want that toxic relationship there. They took away weapons from him. I don't know if that was because they wanted to discourage his numbers, have him go out there and not perform so well, and then they could go to the table and say, see, you're not that good. Take what we're offering you. But he went out there and put up good numbers anyway. So if I'm the Redskins and Kirk Cousins, I would leave that situation. It's just time to move on. Whether it's to the Browns or to another franchise, I just think it's time to move on and get a fresh start. And, hey, you know what? If he does leave, wouldn't it be ironic if the Browns reach out to the Redskins and say, hey, you want to trade up for this fourth overall pick? What do you got? It's been done before. Remember Robert Griffin III? How'd that work out?
Don, is it time for Kirk Cousins to move on from Washington, or Washington to move on from Kirk Cousins?
There were rumors about that. There were rumors that he might be leaving Washington, and I heard that before. And of course, whether there's smoke, there's usually fire. If Cousins wants to leave and go to Cleveland or go wherever, that's not going to bother me one bit because I think that opens up my boy Colt McCoy. I like to see him back on the field. And, when Kirk Cousins got the job, I mean, it was a real tight race between him and Colt. So, hopefully that opens up some room for my former UT Longhorn Colt. I like to see that.
Hmm. Yeah, very interesting there to think about that. Colt, Redskins, Sager, I don't know. Might be something we have to discuss a little bit on another show also. Josh McDaniels, now with the Patriots, has decided that he's going to be the next head coach of the Lions, despite being interviewed by the Giants. Don, did Josh choose the lesser of two evils? You know, knowing that the Giants are actually in a much tougher division, having to compete with the Cowboys and the Eagles.
Well, I think the that maybe Detroit might be a better. Okay, so what they straight? Detroit is not a better city than New York. Okay. But I think the franchise.
We're just talking about football teams right now.
I know. But I'm talking about. But when you move around and you're a coach, you got a family, you consider those type of things. But I think Detroit would be a better franchise, only because I think they actually had the ingredients there to win. Whereas New York. There's something dysfunctional going on in the Giants. You know, Eli is probably on his way out. He's going somewhere else to rebuild his career. I just think that Detroit has a better – if you're a coach, I think Detroit has a better situation geared to win more quickly than you would if you were in New York.
Ron, do you agree?
Yeah, I actually do agree. Plus, if you look at it, if he'll go to Detroit, he'll have a younger franchise quarterback in Matthew Stafford. He'll be inside of a dome, and I don't know if the NFC East is necessarily tougher because you still got Aaron Rodgers with the Packers. You do got the emergence of the Minnesota Vikings now. If they get their situation straight, I know we'll talk about them momentarily. And then the Chicago Bears, they got a young quarterback. And they got a pretty good defense. They just figure out how to work everything else out. Hey, you never know. But I think the pressure in Detroit is obviously far less than in New York. You know, in New York, if you go 10-6, that's not necessarily a good year. You go 10-6 in Detroit, hey, right on, coach. So I just think it will work better because of the quarterback situation, the franchise overall, the expectations. And then like Don said, Detroit isn't a better city to live in than New York. But just as far as what they expect from their teams, I definitely think it's much easier to manage it in Detroit as opposed to the Big Apple.
Kalani, the Giants GM praises Eli and says that they're really undecided on drafting the quarterback. Kalani, is there a Pinocchio nose going here, or is he really serious?
I want to say, James, I want to say it's a Pinocchio nose growing, but honestly, with some of the way these GMs and owners operate and coaches think, it's really hard to think that he's just saying that to say it, honestly. We saw last year the love that the New York City fans have for Eli, the love the franchise have for Eli. It's truly something deeper than what I think many of us outside of New York thought that it was, you know, with the criticism and him not doing so great. But, hey, you won two Super Bowls, and you do what you can given the circumstances with a poor offensive line, no running game, and, you know, outside of Odell Beckham, really no wide receivers or tight ends to talk about. It's hard to suggest that because, you know, I know that they know it's time to move on, but I don't know if they want to draft somebody in the first or second round. That doesn't mean that come the fourth, fifth, or sixth round, they don't try to go get a young quarterback. But given Eli Manning, if he chooses to want to stay around, I seriously doubt the Giants are going to go high with the quarterback, which, you know, could be smart, could be dumb. Time will tell.
Well, they do have a second pick in the draft. Don, your thoughts? Is he serious or you know, are you giving him two Pinocchio noses?
Well, when it's all said and done, you have to take him at his word, and I'm just assuming that there was some seriousness when he was saying that. So, you know, in a situation like that, always take him at the word.
Okay. Don, I talked about it a little bit last week. In fact, I probably talked about it a lot. It's a little heated. But Big Ben says that it's not Tomlin's fault they lost to the Jags. Don, how much responsibility do you give the head coach for a loss?
It always goes to the head coach. The head coach creates the game plan. The head coach has the players out there trying to execute it. So although it might seem unfair to us and the average Joe, ultimately it's responsibility of the head coach, wins and losses. I mean, sometimes players make plays, sometimes they don't. But when it's all said and done, the product you have on the field is a result of what the head coach and his staff has put out there. So ultimately it is head coach's fault.
You agree, Kalani? I mean, you know, the head coach can give you the game plan, but he can't go out and execute for you.
No, that is true. He can't do that. But given the reports we hear, the head coach can control if your star running back, if he shows up on time to the game. He also controls if his assistant coaches show up on time to the game, or at least rather, you know, the time frame that we tell you, hey, 3 hours beforehand and you're showing up late and I allow that. It, you know, just like Don would know, being a teacher and a coach and also a player himself, and James, me and you know, everything starts from the top, fair or not fair. The quarterback gets all the credit when the team wins. He gets all the blame when they lose. Same thing goes for the head coach. Obviously, the players got to go out and execute, but just like the Patriots have shown, it's also the attention to detail and especially knowing the small details that matters the most. Going out there, I forget who it was. I don't know if it was Malcolm Butler or somebody else, but they even said with that Pittsburgh Steelers play against the Patriots where Jesse James reached out, they even said, hey, if it's not fourth down, we know we're not supposed to do that. And I'm not blaming the coach I'm not blaming Jesse James for trying to make a play. Hey, that's what you're supposed to do. But it's the small things like that that we've seen over the years have really held, I believe, the Steelers back in some cases. Now, sometimes, hey, the other team is just better than you that day. It doesn't matter what you do. But there's been also a lack of attention to detail, a lack of discipline, and really a lack of focus sometimes, I feel, in watching the Steelers. And, James, you obviously are closer to it than I am. But I certainly feel that Mike Tomlin is a good coach. I also kind of think he's a bit overrated. As I've said, how many players has he actually drafted that have actually turned out to be very good players? And by good players, I don't mean Pro Bowls and all NFL, but like how many of his guys can you say, oh, yeah, that's Mike Tomlin's guy, whatever. But we heard a lot of controversy, a lot of questionable things. He had the incident with the Baltimore Ravens on the kickoff where he was close to the field. Then he had it where Jerry Porter was out on the field getting into it. Mike Munchak was getting into it on the sidelines with guys. I mean, these are the things you can control as a coach. You don't see this going on with any other coaches, especially the top-tier ones that have won Super Bowls or are supposed to go to Super Bowls. So ultimately, yeah, that kind of does fall on you. And when you allow that type of run of the muck in your team, it just trickles down to the rest of the roster. Hence why you had Antonio Brown and the other player doing Facebook Live in the locker room when it's like, dude, aren't you supposed to be paying attention to this right now? Okay.
I'm not sure about the draft thing because, as you mentioned, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, Juju Stevens, T.J. Watt. I mean, Tomlin, it's not so much he doesn't know who to draft. I mean, Rozier, sometimes he might not put them in the right place, but I also think that also falls on his offense. I mean, his defensive coordinator, but once again, that's the guy that he hired. So, you know, ultimately, as you say, it falls back on Tomlin's shoulders. But it's based on winning percentages until you show me somebody better. And right now, the only one better with a better coaching percentage is Bill Belichick. And I'm not sure that the Steelers can hire him away from Mr. Kraft. So where do you go if you fire Tomlin? You know, I mean, are you really going to go to uncharted waters? You know, are the Steelers fans going to settle for a losing season? You know, a lot of questions to be answered there. But also, there's a lot of questions to be answered in Minnesota. And you kind of mentioned it, Kalani. Did Case Keenum and his performance reinforce the fact that he is a backup in Minnesota and not really a starting quarterback?
Real quick, James, and this is just a question to throw out there. I totally understand what you're saying, and you made a lot of great points. I would also ask this. In 2007, when you guys hired Mike Tomlin, was he the number one choice in your guys' mind? Was Steeler Nation saying, we want Tomlin, boom, 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 boom. I didn't know who he was. Maybe you were aware of him, but he wasn't necessarily a name you heard about. So the Steelers have shown not only consistency with keeping coaches, but they've also shown consistency with finding coaches that aren't necessarily big names, and they turn out to be pretty good. But as far as your question with Case Keenum, it was a great story. It really was. And, you know, he really showed his tail. But you also got to remember, Minnesota's going to be losing North Turner as the offensive coordinator, so it's going to be a new system in there. And Case Keenum, as good as he is, I definitely felt that this was going to be one of those years where he comes in as a backup, really does well, gets a big contract, and then doesn't live up to it, a la Ryan Fitzpatrick and Matt Flynn. So I just felt like, yes, he's good, but he's a backup in the NFL. I don't see him as a starter, and that's not to take any credit away from him, but I don't feel that he's a franchise quarterback or a starter. So hopefully teams don't bury themselves with giving him such a big contract and then come to find out that they're going to regret it in a season or two, if not sooner.
Don, your thoughts on Case Keenum? Is he a backup, or are we going to see him get one of those Joe Flacco contracts?
When it comes right down to it, and if you just look as objective as possible, I think Case Keenum is a solid backup quarterback. I mean, he's the type of guy that you can depend on if you need him for 4 or 5 games throughout the season. I don't know if he's the guy that needs to be there starting all 16 games of the season and try to go to the postseason. He showed his worth. Hats off to him. He's a Texas boy, so I like my quarterbacks from the state of Texas. But, you know, let's just face it. Is he even the best quarterback on that roster? You know, all the injuries aside. I'm proud of him. I just don't know if he's going to be a full time starter in the NFL. A very capable backup, though. Yeah, give him that.
I definitely have to agree with you there. I think he's a very capable backup. Don't know if he's going to be a starter. Maybe Case Keenum ends up in a Cleveland Brown uniform. Who knows? But, you think Mr. Bortles will be the Jags starting quarterback next season after all of the flack that he was talked about this season, especially when they spoke more of him being a game manager than, the gunslinger they thought he was going to be?
I think Bortles is kind of maybe in the same category as Keenum. I think he is definitely a starting NFL quarterback. I'm not sure how much mileage you're going to get out of him as far as going to playoffs and et cetera. I mean, he played admirably against the best team in the NFL, so you got that going. But the thing is, Bortles he's still, in my eyes, a youngster. I don't think the story's been completed on him yet, so I'm going to give him a head higher than let's say Keenum. But I like Bortles. I don't think we've seen his best yet, though. I think the best is still yet to come from him.
Kalani should, you know, the Jaguars do, you know, as you suggested, the Browns, you know, maybe bring in a veteran and set Bortles back down and let him learn a little bit more. What do you think is the future of Mr. Bortles and the Jags?
Well, they've had 4 years with him, so I you know, in the 4 years, I don't know how much more he's going to be able to learn. What's unfortunate is that in 2015, in the second year, it was his best year. He had over 4,400 yards, 35 touchdowns, 18 interceptions, and that was the year where we had Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns really step out and have breakout years. But since then, injuries to both wide receivers have hampered their offense to where Blake Bortles can't go out there and have the vertical threats that we wish he had. Marquise Lee is a good slot receiver, but he's not the speedster to take the roof off of you. So if I'm the Jacksonville Jaguars, I got to make a decision. Do I go out and try to just keep my team how it is, use the draft, maybe pick up a free agent here or there, and go get another quarterback and see how they do? Or do I say, if Blake Bortles is my guy, I got to go out just like I did for my defense. I got to cash out for my offense. I got to find a wide receiver. I got to get a tight end. I got to get possibly a backup running back who's more of a speedster maybe that can catch the ball at the backfield. Maybe I got to go out and sign two free agent wide receivers and draft another wide receiver. Maybe I trade up in a draft since I got a pretty stacked defense. Maybe I trade up in a draft to draft one of the top wide receivers like a Calvin Ridley or Cameron Sutton from SMU. Maybe I get one of those two guys because – when Blake Bortles, just like majority of NFL quarterbacks, has weapons, he's shown that he can be pretty good. And just like we saw in the postseason, if you go out there and not necessarily simplify the game plan for him, but you go out there and try to be smart and say, we don't need you to necessarily throw 350 yards for us to win. Just go out there and don't lose the game for us. He's shown that he can be pretty well in that as well. So if I'm the Jags, honestly, just me, one, you got to pick one of those directions. I would go with another quarterback. Now, I would keep him on the roster, but I would definitely bring in somebody not just for competition, but I'll bring somebody in who can legitimately take the spot from him to see how he reacts to it. If he responds well and rises to the top, then okay, good. I got a veteran backup. But if he doesn't, okay, well, at least I got someone as a backup that would be like, okay, but I got somebody else in front of them. But I would certainly try to go another direction because in 4 years, we've seen what Blake Bortles is. Hasn't really been that good.
Well, let's turn the corner around here to somebody that has been really good. And I don't know. We kind of talked a little bit about his relationship with Sean Payton and you know, how he things that he's done for the city of New Orleans. And just, you know, I mean, he's been up for a couple of Walter Payton Awards. Kalani, can the Saints afford not to re-sign Drew Brees?
No, I don't think so. I think as long as Drew Brees wants to play, you do the same thing that the Patriots have done. You find a way to make it happen with your quarterback. He's been the heartbeat of that franchise ever since he's been there. He's been the constant thing that every year, even if his numbers slip slightly, which this year they necessarily didn't, but even if his numbers slip slightly, he's still going out there and being one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. He hasn't shown any rust. He hasn't shown any age yet, and he hasn't shown that he's slowing down. So I would certainly keep him and whatnot because if you don't, you're taking a chance of going out to get a young quarterback, especially when you have a defense that finally has started to look like it's respectable. You got two proven running backs now behind them. You got an okay offensive line, and then, oh, yeah, you got a wide receiver in Thomas. So if you add some more offensive weapons and add some more depth to the defense, you got the veteran quarterback that can get you there. If you look at the NFL successful teams, Russell Wilson is the only quarterback outside of Nick Foles in the Super Bowl. He is the only quarterback who is not a proven veteran that has been around for a long time to get to the championship out of both conferences and to win. So you got to stick with your veteran quarterback and build around him. And you got a franchise quarterback, do everything you can until the wheels fall off to keep him there and to keep you guys competitive. The same thing to make sure number nine stays there.
Don, your thoughts on Drew Brees and the Saints? Can the Saints let Drew Brees go?
No, think about Drew Brees and Ely, he's getting a little, he's up there in age as well. Think about Drew Brees, and if you think about watching him play the last few years, his body is not really taking a huge toll. He doesn't get hit hard a lot. He's not taking some abuse like some of the other quarterbacks in the league. And maybe that's because maybe his offensive line has done a better job. I don't know, or maybe he just has a knack for avoiding hard hits. But, you know, I think his body's still holding up, and my fantasy, it didn't happen this year, but maybe it'll happen next year or two. I want to see a Drew Brees versus Tom Brady Super Bowl. I think that would save the NFL in some ways. I think that would be a ratings boost. See two of the best go at it. I would love to see that, and hopefully it'll happen. But I think Drew Brees stays in New Orleans until he decides it's time for him to leave. I think he'll be one of these players that, you know, will stay with them and have it out.
That might be something. 2 40-year-olds in the Super Bowl. That's a thought. I'm going to have to cut this short a little bit. Don, before you give your final thoughts, it seems like bettors are putting millions of dollars on the Eagles. As a matter of fact, the point spread has already been lowered from 5.5 to just 5. Don, your thoughts? Are the Eagles that good, or are the Brady haters just out there in droves?
Good point. I think if you just go by history and you look at the past games involving New England and the Super Bowl, the point spreads aren't huge. I mean, they're not winning, you know, by 30 points. They're winning by, you know, 6 points or less, I think, is the average. So, say what you want to about Vegas. Vegas knows what Vegas is doing. It's not rocket science.
Your final thoughts for the evening, Don?
Final thoughts. Well, it's good to be back on the show. Great discussions tonight. Hope the rumors aren't true about Kawhi Leonard that y'all brought up. They have to go start doing some investigating on that. Next week, I'm going to be out of town, so I won't be on. I'll be in Corpus Christi at a conference with some kids. So I will see y'all in 2 weeks. Thanks for having me on. Look forward to it.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot, Don, and we look forward to having you back in 2 weeks, my man. You have a good one.
You too.
Lonnie, you're right out there in Vegas, man. Tell us about the pulse of what's happening out there in Vegas betting on the Eagles.
Well, I mean, they're always going to bet for the underdog just because that's where you get most of your winnings at. The Patriots being the favorites, you have to bet a whole lot just to get a little bit back. I believe I saw something where if you bet $500, you get $100 back. But it's the opposite. You get $100 back, but if you bet $100, I think it's either $500 or $1,200. Or I'm not really good at the whole gambling thing.
Yeah, five to one would be $500 to win
$100. Yeah. See, so it just makes sense to go out there and bet on and bet on the other team. So you know, there's that. If I go in there, I'm not putting $500 down just so I can get $100. I might think the Patriots are going to win, but I'll bet on the other team just in case a miracle happens. Hey, I just got some spending money. But we'll see how the game turns out. Obviously, next week is going to be Super Bowl heavy with the show and all the media coverage, so I know we'll get into it more then. But, hey, you trying to make that money? That's for the one that's not favored.
And I know you have some final thoughts. Tell us about your Monday show and what kind of action we can see this weekend, either on pay-per-view or regular TV.
Well, my final thought is, hey, looks like we're going to be getting the XFL, the Extreme Football League, back in 2020. Vince McMahon of WWE looks like he wants to bring it back. It's not going to be attached to the WWE. He's actually started his own sports entertainment agency so that it could be separate. There's rumors that he might actually sell WWE, so we'll see how that goes. But with the XFL coming back, I know before people laughed at it. It was one season. It was a bit of a ruse. But you also got to realize there was a lot of things that the XFL did that the NFL took away from it, i.e. the cameras on the field, that sky camera that you guys see in the NFL, that came from the XFL. The NFL didn't used to do that. If you watch ESPN's 30 for 30, you can see the ups and the downs of the league. And there was quite a few things that the NFL took from the XFL because it actually was smart. Unfortunately, Vince tried to make it a TV show as opposed to just regular football programming. But now, in 2018, with all the coverage that goes on with football, all the knowledge that people do with college football, the draft, the NFL season itself, we are more aware of NFL players now that aren't in the league as opposed to in 2001. With all the social media and all the networks, there's definitely a market to put this out there. So just imagine, I know it may sound whatever, but who wouldn't tune into a game to see Johnny Manziel, Robert Griffin III, possibly Terrell Owens, Chad Johnson, and other NFL players who are either too old, got burnt out, injuries, or just, you know, couldn't hack it in the NFL, but still have name value from either the NFL or their college days, now in the XFL playing. There are going to probably be some changes to it since the first time around, but I'm pretty genuinely excited to see how this turns out, especially if they bring the Las Vegas Outlaws back. That'll be fun. But as far as this weekend, there is a Bellator card going on tomorrow Friday on the Paramount Network. Lorenz Larkin is in action. And there's an ESPN, there's a UFC on Fox Sports card. Jacare Souza, one of the best Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioners in a middleweight clash with Derek Brunson. These two fought 5 years ago. Jacare got a first-round knockout, but since then, Brunson has been on a rampage. In his latest victory, he knocked out former light heavyweight champion Lyoto Machida. It's going down in Charlotte, North Carolina. Come on and raise up. So it should be a good one. So be sure if you guys get a chance to check that out. If not, tune in on Mondays from 3 to 4:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time to Inside the Octagon, where me and my co-hosts Leo and David, we jump on, we talk about MMA, we cover you for all the latest and greatest stories. So be sure to check that out. You can follow me on Twitter at KLUA11, it's KLUA11, and also my sports page on Facebook. That's All Things Sports on Facebook. James, as always, man, thank you for the platform. Great show as always. You have a good weekend. Until next week, everybody. Peace.